Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest has lived in San Francisco's Castro District for 40 years, well, here and there, and lived to tell the stories. His first memoir, For My Brothers, chronicles the onset of the AIDS crisis and its peak. His newest book, Sex, Drugs, and Disco, covers the years leading up to that. A sort of prequel, although there's more, and we'll share that with you in a minute. Mark Abramson, welcome. Welcome down the Bay.
Thank you, Marilyn.
It's good to have you with us. So, you know, I thought we'd just start and set the tone for this by starting with the prologue. Will you read it for us?
Sure. In the spring of 1975, I graduated from the University of Minnesota and left Minneapolis for San Francisco. I intended to move to Boston for graduate school to study poetry with Anne Sexton, but she committed suicide the previous October, so plans changed. The Iowa Writers' Workshop might have been my next choice, but I grew up on a farm near the South Dakota and Iowa borders, and moving someplace that close to home didn't excite me at all. I had never even been to San Francisco. I had friends who visited often, and they always told me I would love it there. I was playing my saxophone at the Minneapolis Children's Theater one night at rehearsal when my friend Carl Beck, an actor, told me all about his weekend trip. Sunday afternoon, I was at a bar called The Stud on Folsom Street, and Etta James just appeared out of nowhere and sang. And later that night, I saw Rudolf Nureyev at the Rich Street Baths. Mark, San Francisco was made for you. Forget about Iowa. But I already had. Eager young men had flocked to Northern California for the gold rush of 1849. 100 years later, San Francisco hosted the beatniks, fueled on cigarettes and coffee, followed by the hippies in the 60s with dreams of peace and free love while they smoked pot and dropped LSD. That same sense of freedom must have lured all of us, young gay men, in the 1970s, stoked on beer and poppers and libidos running wild. I might have told my family I was headed to graduate school at San Francisco State, but like the thousands of other gay men who arrived here during those years, I was going west in search of one thing. Thousands of other gay men. I've kept a diary for most of my life. This book starts with the very first entry that I made on the day I arrived in San Francisco.
Mark Abramson is my guest here on Out in the Bay. It starts in 1975, this book, right?
Yep.
And you really were part of making this a gay Mecca. There were thousands of gay men flocking here
every week in that year,
who were in their 20s,
yep,
even in their teens, but mostly in their 20s, who were fleeing oppression, fleeing their families, look, it's 1975. We're talking about 40 years ago, so it's quite a different time.
There was no place like San Francisco to be gay.
You couldn't be gay.
In the 70s, yeah.
It was all a very hidden kind of thing, and there were still police raids, so it was still illegal, so it had just, I think, been not too long before that, finally been taken out of the psychologist's DSM.
I forgot what year that was. It was around that time.
Around that time, 75. And so why did you keep a diary? What made you think, well, you know what, I think I'll keep a diary all these years?
You know, when I was in Minneapolis, I was in a journal group, and I was the only gay person in it. But I met all these fabulous writers. A lot of them are quite famous now, and we would meet once a month and read our journals. And I just got into the habit of it. And I wanted to write my life down so that it would be interesting enough that I could share it with them. So when I got to San Francisco, it was just natural for me. And one of the first things I did was to start a journal group of gay men in San Francisco.
Did you have any idea when you were doing this in the 70s that this book is made of? Did you have any idea that this would become something 40 years later you'd publish that would be interesting to other people to read, both as entertainment and as a chronicle of that time, of the wild and crazy sex, drugs, and disco
in
of the 70s?
In the back of my mind, I'm sure I always thought when I was writing this that someday somebody would find it long after I was dead, you know.
And you thought you were going to die.
Well, sure. I never thought I'd be here after the AIDS crisis
because
hit.
You're HIV positive.
Yeah.
But you've been one of the survivors.
Oh, yeah. I'm healthy as a horse now.
One of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
And so part of why you're publishing this, and you wrote For My Brothers, which more chronicles the AIDS crisis and its peak, is for these people who aren't here. the people that you lost, the people that you knew, the community. I mean, the Castro at that time was all gay men. There weren't any women. There weren't any lesbians. There weren't any straight people. There weren't any people pushing strollers, complaining about, you know, the phalluses in the window on Castro Street like they are now.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was all gay men.
Yeah. You rarely saw a woman.
The lesbians were down on Valencia Street.
Yeah, or out at Peg's Place on
Geary.
They were
out at Peg's Place on Geary. Yeah. I remember Peg's Place.
Yeah. They just didn't mix.
No, we didn't mix until AIDS.
Until AIDS hit, yeah.
Right. But keeping that diary, now, you're writing in longhand still when you write.
I do.
You go sit in parks around the city.
I do.
And you write one on yellow tablets or something, right, with a pen.
Yeah.
And how did you keep track of all those years? I mean, do you put them in a vault or a safe? I mean, you've moved a lot. How do you keep track of all
that? I have a bookshelf at home that's just rows and rows and rows of old bound books that were empty blank lined books when I bought them. I used to go to Bell Bazaar on 16th and Mission. There was a post office in the back, and that was where I always bought my journals. And they were these big empty bound books of like 300 or 500 pages. I can't imagine now carrying all that weight around with me, but I always had a backpack, I guess, and I always had a journal. So whenever I was bored or sitting in a laundromat, I wrote so much in the laundromats.
Well, the book is called Sex, Drugs, and Disco. This is Mark Abramson. He's my guest here on Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. And it really is a continuous 300 pages of sex, drugs, and disco.
Well, you know, you named it. The last time I was here on your show, we were talking about For My Brothers, and you said, oh, it's Sex, Drugs, and Drag Queens is all this book is about. And I thought,
well, AIDS.
That's a pretty good title.
Well, Sylvester was the drag queen of note at that time here in the city. And so that's where disco comes from in that sense, because Sylvester was a disco star.
Sure.
And then there was rampant sex and rampant drugs. And so, I mean, in some ways, you're kind of a walking stereotype of what people think gay men in the Castro in the 70s were.
Well, I mean, I was trying to figure it out for myself. But looking back, I sure was. Yeah.
We use this word clones, the Castro clones, which is a certain look. Can you describe what that looks like? Outfit was?
There was a book about Al Parker, a biography of Al Parker called Clone, simply because he was sort of the epitome of the clone. He was really handsome, dark hair,
mustache,
always
Levi's.
A mustache, tight Levi's, and either a tank top or a plaid,
you plaid.
Know, like a Pendleton shirt or a T-shirt and leather.
And boots.
Maybe a little, leather boots. But as I say in the book, not too much leather. That was for
that
Folsom.
That was for Folsom, the leather community, right?
Yeah.
You're not part of the leather daddies.
Yeah.
Right, but more the Castro clone.
Yeah.
And you looked.
And
I mean,
Polk Street was still very gay, but that was the little pink sweaters over the shoulders tied in a bow under the neck. You know, the sleeves of the sweater over the shoulder tied. You still see Willie Brown trying to pull that off now and then. And I think, oh, no. That went out with Polk Street.
Let's have you read another piece. This is about a light show in San Francisco. We had celebration after another. Every day was about celebrating something.
This was so amazing. I thought it should happen always, but it only happened once. This is January of 79, I guess. I called Craig this afternoon and invited him to watch the light show from Twin Peaks tonight from the Red Rock Hill across the street. Corona Heights or Museum Hill or Lookout Point, the hill with a dozen names above the Castro. Anyway, they're shooting laser beams from Twin Peaks to the tallest buildings downtown, and everyone's bringing transistor radios tuned to the same radio station that's playing music to go with the light show. Craig said it sounded like a great idea and we should go to his place afterward and build a fire and watch TV or whatever, but there always has to be a but. He might already have a date with one of the bartenders at the Badlands. The guy was supposed to call, but he hasn't yet. Craig said he's been thinking about calling me anyway. I have no reason to doubt him. He is, if anything, too honest, but the sex is always great. Anyway, the next day I wrote, Craig and I watched the light show with thousands of people spread out on hillsides across the city and thousands of radios tuned to the same music. It was sensational. I hope they do it every year. It ended with the crown of lights on Twin Peaks shining in every direction across San Francisco. I don't know how they did it. Then we went back to his place to build a fire and smoke a joint. We had tea and blueberry cheesecake and watched the Benny Goodman story on TV and had sex during the commercials. Craig is handsome and sexy and good in bed like an athlete is good at his sport, but he's kind of boring when we're not having sex. We never touch each other. This morning we discussed Patty Hearst over coffee. He didn't care one way or the other about her release from prison. He said he had been involved with the No on Six campaign, though. I was glad to hear that. He said, yeah, Moscone was great, but Feinstein's doing okay as mayor. And, yeah, I took a Quaalude the other night and almost picked up a newsman. I wondered if it was Dave, the same one I met. And, yeah, well, I hope I have time to make it to the gym today. I wanted to say, were you such a skinny little runt growing up that you need to prove something now? I wanted to say, yeah, it does seem like we've had sex with two-thirds of the guys in this city, but we haven't really. One-third, maybe. Yeah, I know gonorrhea is a drag. Syphilis is a drag. Hepatitis is a drag. Penicillin shots are a drag.
My guest is Mark Abramson, the author of Sex, Drugs, and Disco, and For My Brothers. You can find him at, what is it called? Beachreading.net. Beachreading.net. Yes. It's published by Wild Books also. He's my guest here on Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. So let's talk about the penicillin trucks, because this is what I understand from some of my friends from back in those days, is that there were these mobile trucks that you could just show up and go get your shots. There was so much sex going on. And this is pre-AIDS, and there was gonorrhea, there was syphilis, there was crabs, there was all these, you know,
yeah,
a cornucopia. So it was like a candy store of sex, and then like a drug store to treat all those.
Well, I don't know where you heard about these trucks, because I don't remember that, but I do remember very well going to the VD clinic down on, was it 7th, south of Market. There was this huge, I wrote about that in For My Brothers, too, about people collecting the numbers that you get, like a number from a bakery, and they'd call your number and you go get your shots, you know. And it was the cruisiest place in town, because if you met somebody there that was at the same level of treatment as you were, you figured you were probably safe, that you weren't going to catch something from them, you know.
I mean, did it ever occur to you that this was a foreshadowing? I mean, we couldn't have predicted AIDS. But didn't you ever worry about it? You write a little bit sometimes in the book about being concerned about your health and not feeling so good and wondering about it all.
There were a few times, yeah. Hepatitis was a big
that could more really, dangerous thing.
I mean, that in this book, that really slowed me down. That put me in bed for a few weeks. In fact, that was the worst thing that I could imagine that I was ever going to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But gonorrhea and syphilis and whatever were just a shot, you know. Just keep right on going.
Just keep right on going.
Yeah.
And it never occurred to you that maybe this wasn't always so safe. Probably because you couldn't make a woman pregnant. Right? So you felt like, well, having gay sex is totally free in that way, because we're not going to get in trouble with anything like that.
It was so great. You didn't have to do anything that was expected of you once you decided that you were gay. It was like, okay, I don't have to get married and have 2.5 kids and buy a house and a car and do all that stuff, you know? And especially coming to San Francisco, rents were so cheap and everybody found whatever they could, you know. I got waiter jobs. I got modeling.
Well, and that's the other thing I wanted to bring up, is that it didn't take very much money to live then.
Oh, no.
You complained several times in the book about, and I had to pay $3.50 for some movie or something you had to pay for, and you were like,
Barbara,
you know,
Cook was $3.50. And then when I went back 3 weeks later to see
singer.
Lily Tomlin, it was $5. I couldn't believe it. And Beach Blanket Babylon was $5 to get in, and then they sold overpriced wine for like $2 or something.
So it was a completely different economic scale 40 years ago. Of course, that makes sense. It's 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was an easier time in terms of you didn't need a lot of money. You worked and you made money, and the rent wasn't high. Rents were like $120.
Yeah, there were rent signs all over town, all the time. If you wanted to move, you moved. You know, I could move in the back of a pickup truck in a couple of hours. I didn't have all the stuff I have nowadays, you know.
Do you think, I'm going to be provocative here and ask you, do you think that having all that sex and doing it with all those different drugs, poppers and acid and booze and pot and all those things, do you think, and coke, do you think that, that there's anything about that that was about, that was not about intimacy, that was about not having intimacy? I'm just curious, as a woman, and as a you know, as an activist for all these years as well, I'm just wondering if there was a sort of masking of a real intimate connection, or did you feel like when you were having this kind of sex that you were having intimacy?
I think each relationship was intimate, whether it lasted a year or an hour. I think there's a way that some gay men, I hope that I'm one of them, who has figured it out, that once you learn to love yourself, it becomes easier to love other people and to really share something, but without all the possessive stuff. I mean, I had to learn that. It took me a long time to learn to be really free with my sexuality and with my friendship. I mean, I think friendship's really important in terms of how you treat people. So if you're treating the people that you're having sex with like your friends, you're not going to hurt them, you know?
Or lying and cheating so many monogamous married people end up having a face.
And if it's really clear to the people that you're with who you are and what you're all about, you're not going to lie to them. You're not going to have to. I mean, it's not for everyone. I certainly value and respect my friends who are coupled and happy, you know.
You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest is Mark Abramson. He's the author of Sex, Drugs, and Disco, which we're discussing tonight. And he's also the author of For My Brothers and also the Beach Reading Series, which has been very popular, which is a much more entertainment-oriented thing. These are memoirs, and it's a real chronicle of the last half of the 70s here in San Francisco and what it was like for you to move here and develop all of the friendships you have and have all of the times that you've had. I want you to read a little bit more from the book, Mark. This is about the euphoria that you felt one day. What was it like back then? This was 79 or something?
Oh, yeah, November 79. I'm happy this morning for no good reason, but it's a pleasant surprise. I'm hungover and I have to leave for work in a while, but I feel good, as if from drugs. I did some last night, but I wonder if this isn't the way life should be. While I was on the dance floor at the I-Beam, I had a flash of euphoria. I know it was partly the grass, the beer, the poppers, a tiny bit of MDA, great music, but I became aware enough to recognize that moment and say, yes, this is it. I knew how loaded I was, but that didn't stop me the way dreams always stop when I realize I'm dreaming just when I'm about to take flight. I did a quick analysis in the moment, and it simply lasted on and on, even into this morning. I realize it's more than just drugs. All the elements of my life are together. Work, job, home, friends, working on a new piece of writing for Christopher Street Magazine, the CMC Carnival is coming up this weekend, and knowing that Bette Midler has finally got a movie. We waited for weeks to see The Rose. It was always sold out.
You're a huge Bette Midler fan.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she made her name in the baths in New York.
Yeah.
And
everybody I knew was a...
That was what made her famous, was the gay male following she had early on. And she's still going. I just saw somebody went to see her show just recently.
Yeah, it was in San Jose last week.
I guess she was
better than ever. But I mean, I saw her back at Bimbo's.
Bimbo's in North Beach?
Yes.
That's a tiny club compared to, what is it, like 400 maybe?
Something like 400, yeah.
What do you see now living in the city for 40 years? What do you see in the neighborhood, the Castro? I mean, how does it feel to you? You've survived AIDS. You're HIV positive. You're healthier than you've ever been. You're in your 60s now. And you're vibrant. You're an author. And I'm just wondering what it's like for you to live in the Castro now. And what kind of... Do you have ghosts that you see? Does anything haunt you? Do you think about your dead friends?
Yeah, I see them all the time. sometimes I'll see a group of young gay guys walking down the street, and I can almost tell you which ones of my friends they were like, you know? It's like there can be a group of four guys, and I'll say, oh, that was Nikki, and that was Kenny, and that was Billy, and that was, and I, yeah, their personalities recur. And I sometimes think, if I could only tell them, you know, you're going to be okay, it's going to all work out, don't sweat the small
stuff. Don't feel bad about yourself because you're gay.
Yeah, don't, yeah. And don't be so concerned about your hairdo or your clothes, because it's all going to change. It's just, you know, if I could talk to myself back then, I would say, don't worry so much.
About?
About anything. About money. About love. About your next job. Your next...
anything.
Anything.
Your just next don't worry
boyfriend.
So much.
Don't worry. Let it happen. Because it's going to happen, you know, one way or another.
When you do readings in bookstores, you must have young men come up and talk to you or be showing up to listen and be interested, I assume.
I'm always interested that, I'm always kind of amazed that young people, yeah, that young people are interested. I think a lot of young people today are a lot more thoughtful and astute than I was. I was just kind of open to whatever happened, whatever came my way, but... you know, I was always a little bit worried.
Well, that's because there's history now. You know, 40 years ago, the only history we had as gay people had to do with the Mattachine Society and what Del and Phyllis did and police raids and all the secrecy and all the danger and all of the crime and against gays, gays against gays, anything, just all the dangers. And so there wasn't a history of a movement. And by 75, when you moved here, that was the beginning. I mean, 69 was really the beginning. But by 75, it was in full bloom, the movement, the gay rights movement. You had Harvey Milk. You were here, actually, weren't you? Let's have you read that part about Harvey. This is...
yeah, I used to go sit in that...
you're a witness to that time here in the city.
I used to go sit in that barber chair in the front window of the store and visit with Harvey.
Of Harvey's Camera Store on Castro Street.
Yeah, on Castro Street. Now I live a few doors from there. Okay, this was the day, Tuesday, November 28th, 1978. I was working in the Transamerica Pyramid at lunchtime. A customer came into the restaurant yesterday and told us that someone had shot and killed Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Quentin Kopp in their offices at City Hall. My first sensation after the initial shock was relief that it was Quentin Kopp and not Harvey Milk. I walked down Montgomery Street to the subway, picked up the late edition of The Examiner, and found out that it was Harvey Milk. And the killer was Dan White, a conservative, homophobic ex-cop and Vietnam veteran. He resigned from his seat on the Board of Supervisors a few weeks back in order to run a family business on the new tourist trap, Pier 39. Then he asked for his job back, but the mayor was about to announce his replacement in a half an hour. I don't know why Dan White wanted to kill Harvey, too. It's all insane. The whole city has the feel of a morgue today. Last week, over 900 members of Jim Jones' People's Temple, who had moved from San Francisco to Guyana, killed themselves and each other in the jungle. Now this happens at City Hall. On Castro Street last night, it looked as if the bars and stores and restaurants were closed. At 9 o'clock, about 30,000 of us marched to City Hall, where people made speeches and Joan Baez sang. We listened to a tape recording that Harvey had made to be played in the event that he was killed while in office.
And that was chronicled in the film, Milk.
Yes.
They had that great scene where he records into the tape recorder in his kitchen in the movie Milk in 2008.
Yeah, that's the tape recording we listened to that night.
30,000.
With candles.
30,000 is a lot of people.
Yeah, it was as far as you could see, walking down Market Street, looking for... there are a couple of places, like by, I don't know if it's Safeway or Octavia, where mm-hmm. there's a little bit of a knoll.
Right.
And you get a sense of, you can see...
how long the ribbon of people
is. And it
is.
Was forever.
Yes.
It was white, little white candles forever and ever and ever. And we must have been fairly close to the front of the crowd because we got there in time to be really close to the stage. Mm-hmm.
very intense. I didn't really know that it was only the week before that the Jim Jones massacre happened.
Yeah.
The mass suicide.
Yeah. And that was just, the city was just kind of numb about that. But the Harvey Milk thing was raw, you know. And Moscone. I'd been at Moscone's victory party, you know.
Well, you lived through that, and then you also lived through the White Night riots, which happened
when Dan White
was let out of prison, which was, you know, setting cop cars on fire.
Yeah, that was May the next year when he was let off with a slap on the wrist. Everybody just went insane.
Insane.
Yeah.
We can't imagine that
now.
I was with Randy Schultz
that night. Yeah. We went down there, and then I immediately said, I don't want to be here. It was just too weird. And we came right back to the Castro, where everybody was coming back after the riots and filling up the bars. And I remember I was hanging out with Randy Schultz, who was just a beer-drinking buddy of mine. And we went over to where the Mix is now, was called the Village Bar then. And we heard all this commotion out on Castro Street, and it was the police cars coming en masse down Castro to the Elephant Walk, where Harvey's is now.
The bar Harvey's at 18th and Castro.
Yeah, and smashing in the windows and clubbing people.
The cops?
The cops.
In retaliation?
In retaliation. There was nothing going on in the Castro.
Well, they were
mad
about us.
But they were mad because of the gays burning the cop cars, so they came back and got even. But everybody that was in the Castro was just crying in their beer. There was no riot going on in the Castro.
Right,
until
and it's
the cops
always in those situations
one.
Just a few people who are doing those more dangerous, violent things.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Well, you have lived through and lived to tell 40
yeah.
years here in the city.
Yeah, since I was 3. I know we're the same age, right?
Don't say that.
Oh, no, you're much younger.
I'm about a week older, but stop it. Well, how do you see, just one last thing I want to ask you right before we're done wrapping this up, and that is, you know, how do you see the city now? Are you still having as much fun? I mean, not as much fun, but still a lot of fun?
I
you have
just,
a big community you know, out there that loves you, that knows you.
There was a piece in here I wanted to read, and I forgot to mark it, but about being in... It was one of the first times I went to Golden Gate Park, and I was lying out there on Hippie Hill with a joint, and Joni Mitchell was playing from somebody's radio off the way, and I said, this is just how San Francisco, how I dreamed it would be. And I said, but the fog is coming in now, and if it's getting cold, and if I lie close to the ground, I'm okay. But if I sit up too high, it's cold, and all I want is to stay in the park for as long as I can. And then the next sentence was, no, all I want is to stay in San Francisco for as long as I possibly can. And I still feel that way. That was 40 years ago. I wrote that in my journal, and I don't know whatever made me think I wouldn't be able to stay here, but it's damn lucky.
You use the hashtag, I love my life, and you write about this on Facebook. Are you on Twitter?
No, I'm not.
Oh, you got to get up with it, dude.
I figure Facebook is enough waste of time.
Mark Abramson has been my guest here on Out in the Bay. Mark, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show and sharing your life with us through your book, Sex, Drugs, and Disco, and your other book, For My Brothers. And we look forward to having you back when you write the book that goes in between those,
more
1980
sex,
to 82. Well, it's, with you, it's always Sex, Drugs, and Disco, honey.
But that's going to be the title of the next, the sequel is more right. Sex, Drugs, and Disco.
Very good. Thank you again,
Marilyn.
Mark. His sexy beach reading mystery series won him acclaim. His memoirs, For My Brothers and Sex, Drugs, and Disco, are chronicles of San Francisco's gay scene of the 70s and 80s. Find him at wildcity.com. Those are his books, and him at beachreading.net. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. My guest, Mark Abramson. Thanks again, Mark. Support Out in the Bay at outinthebay.org. It's tax deductible. Helps keep us on the air. Follow us on Twitter, Out in the Bay. Like us on Facebook, Out in the Bay. And you can follow me on Twitter, too. I put up stuff about the show all the time. Marilyn Pittman. Thanks to Matt Martin and KLW for their support over the years. Our engineer is Joanne Marr. Thanks, Joanne. Eric Jansen and I produce and host this program. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Thank you for joining me. Thank you.